DeAndre Ayton is a go. TJ Warren is a go. And we'll find out on Saturday if Trevor Ariza is gone. That's basically the state of the Phoenix Suns right now as they're taking on the L.A. Clippers tonight. 7 o'clock tip time. Down at
Will they take it on?
The L.A. Clippers.
What does that mean for the Clippers?
Bad news for the Clippers.
Bad news for the Clippers.
I think you two need to come up with a new bit. I don't think that's working. I mean, seriously, you did that all last year. They won how many games? 21?
Yeah.
All right, so hold on. Let me do the math here. 21 and 61 last year. They're 4 and 22 this year. So that's 3, 8, 5, 2. They're 25 and 83 since you guys started the...
What are you trying to say?
I'm saying that if you're the superstitious type, I'm holding you two responsible for the Suns' woes.
Mm.
Who are they playing tonight? The L.A. Clippers. What does that mean for the Clippers? Bad news for the Clippers! Bad news for the Clippers! Yeah, that. They're 25 and 83 since you two started that shtick.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. It's funny. I like
just
it.
Just saying.
It makes me laugh, but it's not like we're having a whole lot of success with that.
Yeah, we're really not having
Maybe
much
success. Maybe you two
with
should
it.
Reconsider. Because I think you started at the beginning of last season.
It's just for the Suns, though. I mean, we've never really brought in other teams on this.
Well, I don't think you should.
Huddle up, Jordan, and figure out. I mean, I just.
Jordan, what do you think?
I don't think we need to carry this to the other teams. We don't want to curse the other franchises.
who do the Cardinals have this week? The Cardinals have the Falcons. What does that mean for the Falcons? Bad news for the Falcons.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to do that for anybody else.
Yeah, that's our saddle
them with that. I'm not a superstitious guy. I'm just saying if I were, I would point out the fact that this season and last combined, they're 25 and 83, and that's about the time you guys started the whole what does that mean for the Clippers? Bad news for the Clippers shtick.
But we want to be there when it turns around to take the credit.
There you go. Okay, I like that.
We want to be
like
there when it actually is bad news for the Clippers. Now, I might be 75 years old by the time that happens.
TJ Warren expected to play. DeAndre Ayton expected to play. But the rumors over the weekend, the main story about the Suns, and they lost again to the Heat on Friday night. We haven't seen them play since then. Is this Trevor Ariza story. Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN reported yesterday that the Lakers and the Suns have had some conversations about Trevor Ariza, who cannot be traded until Saturday. That's the first day they're even allowed to trade him. But they could, either with the Lakers or as part of a three-team deal or with somebody else, Gambo, they could agree to terms on a trade before Saturday. And at that point, if you see Ariza sitting out a game,
You'll know. If he sits out, like if you've got a deal in place for Trevor Ariza, you can't play him. You can't be like, yeah, we got a trade. Okay, now I'm going to borrow him. I'm going to play him for a few days. Because if he gets injured, your trade's gone. And you can't even risk that. Like, you can't. And a team, if you're trading for another team's player, you're going to tell that team, don't play him. Don't play him. Can't risk him getting hurt. You're a team, you want Trevor Ariza. You're telling the Suns, don't play him. You're not going to play him. So the second, and you've got 4 games left from what you've said, 4 games left before December 15th, which is a crazy amount of games in a short amount of time. But if you get to that point where you see Trevor Ariza sitting, he doesn't play. Okay, I know why. They got a deal in place. They got a deal in place.
Sure,
that's why
because they don't want him to get hurt.
Don't want him to get hurt. If he's
and
playing,
screw up the deal.
And if he's playing, you don't have a deal in place. And as of right now, from my understanding, they don't have a deal in place. They do not have a deal in place. Now they're working on a deal. I think they expect that they're going to be able to trade him. There are at least eight that have contacted the Phoenix Suns and are interested in Trevor Ariza. There are at least eight. So the Lakers are definitely one of those teams, but they are not close to any deal with the Lakers. Nothing is imminent. And the reports that came out is, yeah, the Lakers have some interest, but there are many other teams that have interest as well. And there's nothing that the Suns are not taking back Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and a bench player. And they don't want prospects. They don't want the developmental guys either. They need some guys that can play.
And the word in Woj's story, and I know you've said basically the same thing, that the potential of a third team getting looped in, who they might want Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. If you could use Trevor Ariza as a means to an end, if you're the Suns, to try to at least somewhat upgrade your point guard position, I'd be all in favor of that. I mean, 100% in favor. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, no interest. Absolutely none. Does nothing for
That's
me.
That's why Markelle Fultz isn't coming here either. I mean, the Suns have enough guys they're trying to develop. Can you imagine them trying to develop, trying to figure out him too? They got enough problems of their own. So Markelle Fultz is not a guy that I expect to come here. I really don't expect them to go after Markelle Fultz. I think they're looking for somebody, and it's hard. I mean, there's only, you know, there's only 15 like elite level quality point guards in the NBA right now. So it's, and it's hard to get those guys. But you are looking for a guy that can create some shots for Devin Booker, you know, take a little bit of the pressure off, also defend, knock down some shots. And, you know, those guys, they don't grow on trees. Now, there are guys you can go get Pat Beverley. And he's a good player and he'll improve your team. But you also don't want to get, you know, you got to be reluctant. What's the cost? What do I have to give up to get that guy?
And that to me, I'm glad you brought that up. And that to me is why Ariza is the perfect bait to go get a guy like that. I don't need Ariza to solve the long-term problem of who my point guard is. I need somebody now. I need
so
somebody.
If you traded Ariza for a point guard, I'm all for it. Like, if you could trade Ariza and just get somebody.
That's what I just said.
Yeah, I could live with
that's
that.
That's what I just said, because Ariza, to me, is a completely disposable asset. Completely.
Right.
Okay? I need somebody on this roster yesterday to be the point guard. All right? And it doesn't have to be the guy who's going to be my point guard for the next 5 years. It doesn't have to be the point guard of the next great Suns team. I need somebody to fill that position yesterday. Right now. Ariza is the perfect, and I use the word disposable, but I think we all know what I mean by that, very tradable asset I've got. And if I can use that guy to get my Band-Aid point guard so I don't have to ask Book to do it, so I can make everybody else a little better on my roster, make the deal on Saturday. Make the deal before Saturday if you're the Suns, because you've got to get that guy in here as soon as humanly possible. And I'm willing to use Trevor Ariza.
Instead of a draft pick. Right, I don't want to give up the Milwaukee pick
for a Band-Aid.
To get that
guy.
Yeah.
Even if it means, let's say, Patrick Beverley. Okay? A Patrick Beverley type. Somebody who can fill that role for now.
Sure, I like Pat Beverley.
Okay.
I like Pat Bev. I like him.
That, to me, is
and
the
he wouldn't
kind
be,
of...
Listen, he wouldn't cost you a lot to keep him anyway. 2 years, $20 million. You could probably get him on a deal. And, you know, he's a good player. I mean, he's a good player. I just, like I said, I'm reluctant to give up first-round picks for guys that aren't going to be here long-term.
But you're not reluctant, and you shouldn't be, to give up Trevor Ariza for that, even if it's temporary solution at the point guard position.
I don't want draft picks back either. I mean, obviously they're not spending, you know, they're not going out and actively spending as much time recruiting college players as they had in the past. They've already got three picks in the top 35. So, yeah, no, I don't want another pick.
Yeah.
Go get a player. Get somebody that can help.
DeAndre Ayton has to go up against the big guy, Boban Marjanovic, who was in his head the last time they played the Clippers. He talked about that at shoot-around today.
Put all my strength into Boban, just to keep him off the glass. You know, he's my responsibility tonight, and, you know, I know my rest of my teammates have my back on the board, so I just got to keep him out the way and just worry about him. He's my responsibility, and do what we got to do on the offensive end.
It was shocking to hear Ayton admit that after the last time the Suns played the Clippers how much Boban Marjanovic was in his head.
That guy's 8 feet tall.
I know, but it was still shocking. You're DeAndre Ayton.
I know.
You're the number one pick. You're a freak.
I know, but don't. Like, I think the thing with Ayton is like you look at the body and you see a man child. Then you hear him talk, he's a kid.
And you just hear the child part?
No, but that's true. It's true. You look at him and you're like, oh man, 7'1". You know, what is he, 240 pounds? I mean, you look at, wow. God, he's a man child. Look at the size of that guy. Then you hear DeAndre Ayton talk like, you're dealing with a kid.
Yeah.
He's immature. He is. He was a 19-year-old 6 months ago. He was a teenager, for goodness sakes. He can't go buy a beer right now. So it's like, you know, you got to put that into context, because we look at him and we expect one thing, then we hear him talk and we get another.
Tomorrow is Ticket Window Tuesday. It's brought to you by Arizona Central Credit Union. We're giving you the chance to win a pair of two-day passes to the Innings Festival coming to Tempe Beach Park. Marks March 2nd and 3rd. The festival features Eddie Vedder, Incubus, Jimmy Eat World, and many more. Listen at 7:15, 10:15, and then in the afternoon at 12:15 and 4:15 for your chance to win. It wasn't anywhere close to his best performance. What's the reason for Josh Rosen's struggles yesterday? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, the Burns and Gambo Show, hanging out with you on this Big Red Monday, one of which the Cardinals lost 17-3 to the Detroit Lions in a game that did not look any better, not one bit, other than maybe defensively a little bit. You know what? I'm going to retract what I was about to say. They played better defensively, all right, than they did at the beginning of the season. But in some ways, that game looked almost exactly like we saw in week one against the Washington Redskins. It was almost like, wait, what happened? You lost at home to who? How? By how much?
Yeah.
What happened? I mean, I understand the blowout games, okay? And we've seen our fair share of those, okay? But those were against fairly good teams. You got blown out against the Chargers. You got blown out against the Rams.
Denver?
Yeah, Denver, not a, they're an average team. But to lose at home to the bad teams, yeah, it's like, what? 17-3? And at the heart of it is Josh Rosen. A performance that, and we started to get into this the last time we talked about Josh Rosen. If you look at his first ever start for the Cardinals, all right, against the Seattle Seahawks, it was a performance at the time that was hailed as one of the best rookie debuts that Pro Football Focus had ever seen. I went back and looked through some of my old notes. If the drops don't happen, he's like 20-27 for 300 yards and two or three touchdowns in that game.
Yeah, it is crazy when you go back to, I mean, you made the point earlier that his best start was his first one. And you're exactly right. I mean, that was a start. Okay, first NFL start. 15-27, 180, sacked once, had a touchdown. 6 drop passes. He went 6-for-7 against the blitz. 6 completions and 7 attempts against the blitz. Pro Football Focus said it was the best starting debut for a rookie since they started doing grades in 2006. Best starting debut for a rookie since they started doing grades 12 years ago. He held the ball a half a second longer than Bradford did, and his completion percentage, when you account for adjusted drops and throwaways, was 72%. So when you look at those numbers, you're like, okay, that was it. Now, has he had a game like that since? The answer is no. He's had moments, he's had quarters, he's had drives, but not games. We have not seen a complete game out of him. And they might have won that Seattle game if it wasn't for a huge drop by J.J. Nelson on a possible touchdown. They were, you know, they had a chance to win that one.
Do you remember how excited we were about Josh Rosen the day after that game? Even though they lost.
The Seattle game, yeah.
Yep. Even though they lost, and even though it was a depressing loss, and but we came in here the next day, and all anybody could talk about was, man, he was good.
Yeah, then
he was really good.
And then the second half against the San Francisco 49ers the next week, he went 2-for-10 for 15 yards in the second half, and it was like, oh, okay.
Yep. And that's
all right.
And that's the concern about Josh Rosen. Okay, the numbers, if you just, and this is why I agree with what you said, sometimes you got to take the numbers and just throw them out the window.
Right.
Numerically speaking, that was one of his best starts as a member of the Arizona Cardinals yesterday. If you watch that game, there is nothing about what you saw that backs that up. Nothing.
Nothing.
All of the numbers were padded in the fourth quarter. Most of the numbers were padded after they were down 17-3, and Detroit was playing kind of a soft prevent defense where they were just keeping everything in front of them. Before they were down 17-3, I think he had like 170 yards passing, all right? So take the numbers and throw them out. What our eyes are telling us is that Josh Rosen, his best game so far this year was his first one, and that is a little concerning, all right?
And that was the fourth game of the season.
Yep. I agree with you, and you've said, you've made the point for a month and a half.
He's not going to progress that much with this team.
You can't expect a ton of progression, and I agree with you. But regression? Going backwards? That's the scary thing.
Well, that would be concerning. I mean, obviously that would be concerning that he's taking a step backwards, because you want to see some improvement, or at least, you know, steady play of average or just decent. But, you know, he was late on everything yesterday. His throws were terrible. The six best offensive linemen to start the season are all gone. They're gone. And your wide receiver's a mess. The situation's a mess. It is hard to gauge it. It's extremely hard to gauge it based on what they have.
Steve Wilks was asked today during his press conference if there's been any thought at all to benching Josh Rosen, to protect him, to let him sit and watch and learn.
I think Josh is getting valuable reps, and I've said that before. He can't get enough. And, you know, really talking to Byron, it's so many different looks that he needs to see. And in saying that, I think we have to do a great job from a protection standpoint, whether it's moving the pocket, you know, seven-man protection, those kind of things, to help Josh, you know. But to sit him, I think it would be advantageous to do that. You know, I think it's an opportunity for him to continue to grow and you know, progress towards next year.
Well, Steve Wilks was also asked if he thought Josh Rosen is developing any bad habits during this bad stretch.
I don't want to say any bad habits. Is he inconsistent at times? Yes. Could he be better with his reads? Yes. And those are some of the things we're going to have to emphasize and work on. And I think Byron is doing a great job with him.
Byron's in a tough spot. He's still – he didn't get to, like, put his – this isn't his offense. Right. He didn't get – he got to make changes to what Mike McCoy had. He got to make changes. And each week you do a little bit here, you do a little bit there. You get to call plays. You get to change protections and things like that. And I think probably for one of the first things – with all these new offensive linemen coming in and starting three rookies, is the most important thing is we got to try to keep Rosen upright. We got to try to keep him safe. And that takes precedent over trying to be more creative and, you know, do a lot of things that Byron may want to do. I mean, they just want to make sure that the kid doesn't get his head taken off. I mean, they got to get out of this season without him getting clobbered. So that's number one. But it's also like, you know, when you've got Mike McCoy getting fired a few games into the season, it is tough because, like, we know this. You can't change the playbook. You can't be like, okay, throw the playbook away. I'm going to put in my playbook. Now we got to learn all these plays. You can't. You just got to change some things a little bit at a time. You got to eliminate the plays you don't like, add a couple of plays that you do like, and then the rest of the playbook is you're just trying to adjust.
Yep.
Change protections on plays. You could do that.
And but call them a little differently, right? Call them in a different sequencing. Yeah. Call a different set of plays more than other plays. I mean, you can do some different things, but you're right. I mean, yesterday it was very obvious. This is still Mike McCoy's offense that Byron left, which is running. And how they're going to judge the job he's doing is beyond me. I mean, I really don't know.
Well, first you have to judge whether you're bringing Wilks back or not. And then if you decide you're going to bring Wilks back, but then you've got to decide which coaches do you want to keep that are on his that are on his staff. And I don't know, if they do keep Wilks, there's going to be a lot of turnover for those coaches, a lot. I truly believe that. And I don't know that Wilks comes back. I mean, I mean at this point, they may know, or they may just say, okay, they may think they know, and I just want to see. We're going to ride it out. Gut feeling is they're going to fire him, but we're going to ride this out and just going to see what happens over the next few weeks.
Yeah.
But if they do keep him, then you decide, okay, maybe Byron's the guy you want to keep. And then Byron would have an entire season to put a playbook in that, look, Bruce Arians thought he was a rising star, Byron Leftwich. Mm-hmm. He'll get a job somewhere if he gets fired here.
Sure.
I mean, he is a bright young
maybe
mind.
Maybe not as an OC, but as a quarterback's coach somewhere and to kind of work his way back up again. Getting back to Rosen, there's not a whole lot. We've both been doing this a long time. There's not a whole lot that surprises me in terms of how fans react to things or things along that nature. I was genuinely surprised today to get at least three tweets, maybe more, from people saying if the Cardinals have the first pick in the draft, they need a quarterback. And I'm just not there yet. I'm not even close to there yet. But it is, I mean, to think about where we were the night of the draft and how excited we were that the Cardinals had done what they did, to where we are now, the beginning of December, to think that a very small few of fans are saying you need another quarterback. That went quick, didn't it?
Well, those people are jumping the gun. I mean, that's absurd. Okay, that's ridiculous. Now, you may be right in the long run, but you can't make that determination now. This kid's playing with a banged up offensive line and no skill position players and a switched offensive coordinators in the middle of the damn season. I mean, that's unfair to sit there. It's
agreed.
Unfair.
Totally this agree. Kid,
you got now. Listen, in the end, he may not be the right guy, but there's no way you can make the determination now and waste a draft pick on a quarterback. There's just no way. I mean, you got to play this out with him. I mean, you cannot give up on him right now. For goodness sakes, you traded up to go get the guy.
Totally agree with you. And another thing that we can agree on is that any signs that Josh Rosen might be regressing this year is concerning. Not concerning enough to convince us that they don't have this box checked in the future, that they don't have their future franchise quarterback on the roster. But it is a little worrisome that after how many weeks has he played in the NFL now?
Eight? Week four was his first start.
Okay, and this is week 14
week three,
that we just got done?
He played, but okay. week four was the first start.
Okay. Not getting better, I'll give you that. But getting worse, that's a little troubling. If that's indeed what's happening, that's a little troubling.
Well, I like what you said. I mean, if his best game was that fourth game against Seattle, how come we've gone all these extra weeks and haven't had a game like that?
Yep.
Because that was probably his best game. I think you're right.
After yesterday's loss, the Cardinals are back near the top of the NFL draft order. Is there trust in their current regime to make the pick? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
must learn.
It's the Knowledge Drop.
Let knowledge drop.
The Knowledge Drop. Brought to you by Lifetime Windows. Did you know metal window frames conduct heat right into your home? Visit LifetimeWindowsAZ.com.
2019 NFL Draft Order. It's our Knowledge Drop today. As of right now, today, snapshot moment, three teams are tied with 3-10 records, and three teams are tied with a win percentage, two teams are tied with the strength of schedule against, all right? So through other tiebreakers, and I'm not even sure what they are at this point, as of right now today, San Francisco's got the number one pick, the Arizona Cardinals have the number two pick. And then Oakland, which has a better strength of schedule, even though they have a 3-10 record just like the Cards and the Niners do, they're picking third. So it's the Niners 1, the Cardinals 2, Oakland 3, Atlanta 4.
Oh, my God. And they play Atlanta this week.
Right. The New York Jets 5, followed by Buffalo, Jacksonville, Tampa Bay, the New York Giants, and the Detroit Lions.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I mean, that's the benefit of, I guess the silver lining, and one thing you take out of that game, as boring as it was, the snooze fest at the State Farm yesterday. I mean, that's what I called it, the SF at the SF, the snooze fest at State Farm, because I was nodding off like six times during the game. I mean, it was bad. Is that everybody else won? Like Oakland won, and San Fran won, and the Jets won, and I mean, Detroit won, obviously. So, you know, all of these teams won, which does help the Cardinals, because look, you want to win football games,
mm-hmm.
but when the draft comes, I'd rather be picking first and fifth.
Sure.
So right now you want to win football games and then let the chips fall where they may. But then on a day of the draft, if you're picking fifth, you're like, man, I wish they were picking first. I wish they were picking second. I wish we were picking here instead of them, you know, that type of thing. So that's the one thing that, you know, you look at with the draft is, now there's still a few games left to be played, but I just don't know if any of these games are winnable. I mean, you know. Detroit was a winnable game. Green Bay was a stealable game, as we talked about. Atlanta's terrible, but how are you going to – I mean, Matt Ryan, he did throw three touchdown passes yesterday. The Falcons are really bad, but then the next two games, you're going to play Seattle and the Rams, two teams in the division that still have a lot to play for. You're not getting any breaks there.
Seattle is still trying to improve their positioning. They're playing Monday Night Football tonight against the Vikings. They're still trying to improve their positioning. They're trying to fight off the Eagles and the Panthers for that last playoff spot. They still have plenty to play for. No, look, we've had so many conversations about tanking and whether you want to tank and whether you want to root for tanking. Maybe you can do whatever you want to do. Me, typically, I like to look at that draft pick as kind of a nice consolation prize, because you're right. The closer we get to the draft, the happier we'll be that they didn't win these football games, right?
Sure.
The happier we'll be with the better pick.
That's your consolation prize.
It's not just a better pick in the first round. It's second round, third round, fourth round. Every round.
And then when you're trading, it's a better pick. If you pick in, you know, you'll have better opportunities for trade because it's all based on a point system. So if you take the third round and you take the first pick in the third round compared to the fifth pick in the third round, it's got higher point value. So now when you trade, I'm going to trade my third and my fifth rounder for that, you're going to have better options to trade. So your third and fifth rounder is more than anybody else's third and fifth round.
Yeah.
So you're
going
to have the best option to trade because anybody else offering the same round can't top you.
No doubt.
They would have to go, well, I'll have to give you my fourth round pick instead of my fifth round pick. So my third and my fourth trumps their third and fifth. But that's where you have the advantage in making trades as well.
But the wins are good because the wins are about culture. The wins are about setting a tone. The wins are about putting in a belief system. The wins are about, you know, it feels better to come to work when you're winning if you're a football player. So I could see it from both sides, but you're right. Come April, it'd be nice to have the pick. Now, the parallels are really obvious between the Suns and the Suns of about 7 months ago and the Cardinals about 2 months from now. The Suns going into their offseason had the number one pick. They had money to spend. They had assets they wanted to go get and improvements they wanted to make. They kept their general manager, allowed him to make all of those important decisions in the offseason, and then in a very unusual move, fired him 9 days before the season started.
Yeah, very unusual.
I'm not saying the Cardinals are going to do the same thing, but the Cardinals are kind of faced with a similar choice. We, the Cardinals, they'd be saying to themselves, we might have the number one pick in the draft. we are going to have 60, 70, maybe 80, maybe more million dollars to spend in cap space. Do we trust the guy that we have who's going to spend all that capital to make the right decisions with it? The Suns did. They stuck with Ryan, and he made all the decisions, and he got fired 9 days before the season started. Will the Cardinals trust Steve Keim with all of those toys to play with this offseason to make the right decisions?
I think so. I mean, I really do believe that he stays. There are a lot of people that would like to see the Cardinals just do wholesale changes, and that's understandable with the year that they've had. But it's unrealistic, I think, to have all of those changes. I mean, for the most part, I mean, Steve Keim did come into the season with the fifth most wins of any general manager over the last 5 years. Now I think he's sixth with the record they've had. There's been a lot of success and there's been some failures, obviously, which everybody has, but this is the first really bad year he's had, like really bad year. So, I mean, I think he gets another year to get this turned around, and then you could evaluate next year if everything goes south and it's terrible, if he has a bad draft, if he flops on free agency, you could bring it back up again. But right now, I really don't think they make a change at that spot. I think they'll look at the head coach, but I think that they'll give, you know, I think they'll give this another year. It looks like this was a good draft class. Agreed? It does look like it was a good draft class. Now, you may have missed on the coach. And if you did, move on. Quickly admit your mistake. Hey, wasn't the right guy for us. We're moving on. It's impossible to know whether assistants will be good head coaches because they've never done it before. It's impossible. You're taking a chance, taking a gamble. Everybody is. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I do think that Keim gets another opportunity to try to get this right. If we're in the same spot next year, then we could bring this up and it'll probably be more legitimate that they can make a change.
I agree with you. And I only say this as a devil's advocate type role. In that, you could look at, since he took over the job as GM, the record they have, the sixth best in the league. I could also look at the last 3 years and say they haven't made the playoffs in three seasons. And they've been toiling in mediocrity for the last three seasons. It depends on how big of a piece of the pie do you want to look at. Do you want to look at 1 year and what could be a 3-13 season? Do you want to look at 3 years of not making the playoffs? Or do you want to look at 6 years and say, he's got the sixth most wins of any general manager in 6 years. You can choose, if you're a fan of the Cardinals, to look at it however you want to look at it. Me personally, I look at it as a guy who has had his team in a mostly competitive position every single year he's been the general manager, except for this year. And that one year.
Yeah, you don't get rid of him because of that one year.
You don't get rid of him just because of that 1 year.
I don't think so.
I don't think, and this to me has always been my strongest argument, I think, for Keim, at least in my own mind, it's the strongest argument. Last year, with no Carson Palmer, with no David Johnson, with injuries all up and down the offensive line, with a good coach, they went 8-8, okay? There was talent on that roster last year, enough talent that the coaching staff was able to make it work towards an 8-8 season. How do we know there isn't talent on this roster right now that just isn't being used appropriately? Because last year, that roster was just as decimated as this one is now.
And they won 8 football games. One in Seattle, won 8 games.
If not more so decimated than this one is right now. And they still won 8 football games. There was talent there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if Bruce Arians was the head coach of this team right now, would they have 3 wins? Probably not. They'd probably have a better record. I'm sure that they would. The thing with Wilkes is it is tough to determine whether he's the right guy or not. Because, look, their defense was good. I mean, he shut Matthew Stafford down. I mean, Matthew Stafford had 100 yards passing in a football game.
Sure.
Detroit's top rusher had 54 yards rushing. Detroit as a team had like 220 yards, rough estimate, around 220
10 points
yards.
Offensively. Take away the pick 6, they scored 10 points.
So the defense did a really good job. I mean, they shut down their top wide receiver. I mean, they literally shut them down defensively. The offense has no wide receivers. It's got the offensive line is completely depleted. Do I think it's difficult to judge Wilkes? Yeah. Do I think he's the right guy? Look, my gut feeling right now is no. My gut feeling is I think they probably need somebody else. But they'll probably take these final 3 games to make a full determination on that.
Tomorrow, Ticket Window Tuesday, it's brought to you by Arizona Central Credit Union. We are giving you the chance to win a pair of 2-day passes to what sounds like a really good music festival. It's called the Innings Festival. Coming to Tempe Beach Park on March 2nd and 3rd, featuring Eddie Vedder, Incubus, local band Jimmy Eat World, and many more. Listen at 7:15 a.m., 10:15 a.m., and then in the afternoon at 12:15 and 4:15 for your chance to win. D-backs made the biggest splash of the offseason so far. They traded Paul Goldschmidt to St. Louis, but now with the winter meetings in full swing, what else could be next? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. You know, it's funny, now that the winter meetings are going on in Major League Baseball, Jordan just mentioned something to me. I'll play a soundbite here from David Sampson, the former Marlins president. He was on the Dan Le Batard Show. Now that Jordan mentions this, I vaguely remember this. Do you remember the near Jose Fernandez, Patrick Corbin trade?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, David Sampson confirmed that today. Here's what he said.
I'd just like to go through names that you guys were close to getting. Like, what are some of the things that would excite Marlins fans in retrospect? Because now it can be told the Marlins were close to trading so-and-so for so-and-so.
We almost traded Jose Fernandez for Patrick Corbin, who just signed a six-year, $143 million deal with the Nationals. And we would have also gotten Brandon Drury, who was traded to the Yankees, I think, this past offseason. That was a blockbuster trade. We had Jose traded. That would have been a great trade.
Well, what happened, though?
The owner of the Diamondbacks, a guy named Ken Kendrick, would not take Jose.
Because?
He liked his own players. A.J. Pollock, you know who that is?
I've heard the name.
You've heard the name. Yeah, he's a free agent, too, a very good player. I mean, it would have been a blockbuster trade. And it was a trade we couldn't refuse as much as we loved Jose.
I remember that deal being in the wind a couple of years ago. Right? Yeah, that is good stuff. David Sampson, the former Marlins president, basically saying it would have been Drury, Pollock, and Corbin for Jose Fernandez.
Wow. I think they probably were afraid of the amount of money Jose Fernandez was going to get.
That Marlins were, or the D-backs?
That the Marlins would have had to pay Jose Fernandez.
Yeah.
That the Diamondbacks would have had to pay.
That's what I thought you meant. Yeah, the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks. Interesting. I'm trying to think. Would that have been 2014? 2014? 2013?
Well, he's been gone for
there.
How many years now?
Yeah, when did...
3 years?
Yeah.
Two or 3 years? It's at least two seasons. At least two. You're going to have to look it up. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I'm looking right now to see when he passed away, when he was in the 2016. September 25th, 2016, in that boating accident. So
2 years.
So just 2 years ago he died.
A little bit over 2 years.
So potentially discussing that trade in 2015, 2014, somewhere around there. Yeah,
because he didn't get the big contract, I don't believe.
No, I don't think he did.
I don't think he did get the big contract.
So again, that was David Sampson. He was a guest on the Dan Le Batard Show, and he was willing to reveal that deal was much talked about and very close to being done. And in his estimation, the deal was struck down because Ken Kendrick did not want to do it ultimately.
Yeah.
So interesting to think about what could have been.
Man.
Right?
I mean, he was such a great pitcher. He was a great pitcher, Jose Fernandez. Fantastic. But I think probably the price was just too high because at that time, you know, Corbin was young and Pollock was young, and it was just, I mean, he said blockbuster trade. So that was a lot of key pieces that would have, you know, gone back to the Marlins that you would have given up on for him.
Mike Hazen, with the winter meetings underway, the general manager of the Diamondbacks, was on the MLB Network today and was asked about the chances that Zach Greinke gets traded.
I don't know. I think we're very fortunate to have a guy at the top of the rotation like Zach Greinke, one of the top five pitchers in at his position in the league. And we've had the benefit of the last 2 years to watch him go out there and dominate for two straight years. And we're thankful that he's in our rotation. I don't know what the week's going to bring.
He was also asked if the ship has sailed on A.J. Pollock coming back.
Has the ship sailed on A.J. Pollock? Is that door kind of closed? Or do you ever say, you never say no until a guy actually signs?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think center field is probably the one area that we still need to look to address this offseason. So we're still very engaged in the entire market.
I think they're engaged as far as... They've got that. If they're not going to do a complete rebuild, they're engaged as far as, okay, now you got to replace guys. Okay. They've already replaced, they've got two starting pitchers that the Diamondbacks have gotten. They're going to go get a center fielder to replace A.J. Pollock, and that center fielder is going to come from free agency, most likely. It's going to come from free agency. They're not trading Robbie Ray. They're unlikely to trade Peralta because they need outfielders, although he's not untradeable. So these winter meetings are going to be pretty interesting because they lost Mathis, but now they've replaced him. They've lost pitching, but they've replaced the pitching they've lost. So you kind of like, okay, I'm going to lose this guy. I'm going to plug this hole. I'm going to lose this guy. I'm going to plug that hole. And that's what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they lost Mathis. They replaced it. you know,
Carson
with,
Kelly.
With the catcher with Carson Kelly.
Luke Weaver into the rotation, yeah.
Right, I mean, you lost your two pitchers. I mean, you've added two pitchers because you added the ASU kid as
Merrill
well.
Kelly,
Merrill
yeah.
Kelly. So right now, it's tit for tat. I mean, everything time, they lose something, they add some. Lose something, they add some. So they're not going into this right now with, like, I got six needs because I just lost all these guys. They're going into this knowing that they're going to lose A.J. Pollock, and they've got to get a center fielder. So that's what they're really working on.
I'll be curious to see, and I haven't done a lot of looking into this yet. I do, and maybe I'll do this tonight a little bit while I'm watching the football game, just to see, or the Suns game too, just to see what's out there. Like, to hear you say, okay, they're going to go into free agency to get their center fielder. Who's out there? I don't even know.
Austin Jackson?
I mean, I don't even know who's available. I mean, is there somebody out there who makes more sense than just moving Ketel Marte out to center and redoing your infield?
Probably. I mean, probably. There's probably, because I believe that's what they're going to do. I think they're going to keep Ketel Marte in the infield and then go get a center fielder. From what I'm hearing, that's what they're going to look at. You know, is a center fielder. I'm trying to get names, but I can only speculate right now. But it'll probably be a free agent. They'll probably look to plug that hole. They're not going to spend a lot of money on somebody. But you're right. The list is not great. When you look at potential free agents center fielders, it's not a great list.
I don't know how good the list is. I want to kind of find out how good the list is, because if they're not going to spend a whole lot of money to plug that hole at center field, Ketel Marte still could be a center fielder from top, right? I mean, if it's a Jerrod Dyson type, right? Technically, they went out in a free agency and got a player to be a center fielder, but he's not the center fielder, right? He's not the guy who has to play it every day.
Right.
He's just a body who can be a part of some sort of a platoon-type situation out there. Maybe that's what they'll do when they go out and address center field in free agency.
Because they don't have that guy in the minors. I mean, yeah. They don't. They were thinking about having Marte play center field, so they don't have that guy available.
You mentioned Robbie Ray. That was the big story this morning on Twitter. A lot of national baseball writers tweeting out, here's one, Bob Nightingale tweeting out, several teams who checked in with the Diamondbacks say Robbie Ray is not available.
I'm hearing the same thing.
You're hearing the same thing,
same
right?
Thing.
He's not available. Yeah. So that is what's going on with the winter meetings. We'll let you know tomorrow what the Diamondbacks are going to do. Time for the Coors Light. What's on tonight, the games that we are going to watch this evening, Suns basketball against the LA Clippers at Salking Stick Resort Arena. That game tips off at 7 o'clock. We've got a 30-minute rundown with Luke Lipinski coming up to take you into that Suns game. Let's see if DeAndre Ayton cannot let Boban Marjanovic get in his head.
Just waiting for DeAndre Ayton to have this game that we've been waiting for so long. I mean, maybe tonight will be the night. It's frustrating watching Luka Doncic play so well and see Ayton struggle.
We are out of here. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a good night, everyone.